Welcome back to Stratford Mail, a production of Stratford Hall Historic Preserve, where we give voice to Stratford Hall's people, places, and past to engage, educate, and inspire. Find us on the web at stratfordhall.org. I'm Director of Research, Dr. Gordon Blaine Steffi. This month, we read a brassy letter from 12-year-old Alice Lee of Blenheim in Charles County, Maryland, to her second cousin William Lee of Stratford, a commercial agent for Virginia Tobacco, living in Tower Hill, London.
Maryland. The 27th of September, 1772. Dear cousin, so, you threaten me if I prove deficient in the deference I owe you as a married man, with the power you have of forwarding or retarding my success in the matrimonial way. This would be a tremendous threat indeed, were I as fond of matrimony as my young mistress, as you call her, but happily, I am little more than 12 years and not so eager to tie a knot which death alone can dissolve. And yet, I pretend not to ridicule the holy sacred institution, but have all due reverence for that and the worthy people who have entered into the society, from good and generous motives. It is only those who choose to be married at all events that I think deserve raillery.
Alice Lee was the great-niece of Thomas Lee of Stratford. She was reared at Blenheim Plantation on the north bank of the Potomac, below the Port Tobacco River mouth. Her father, Richard Lee III, married Grace Ashton, whose roots were in Westmoreland County, Virginia, and who brought 2,200 acres of prime Northern Neck property to the marriage. When Richard died in 1787, he named his daughter Alice, now 38, co-executor of his estate, and settled on her half of her mother's old properties in Virginia. Among elites, strategic marriages were critical to growth and prosperity. Marriage built new ties, new dynasties, reaffirmed old ones, and was in every case an exercise in swelling the wealth and status of the families involved. It was a family affair, and families were actively involved in courtship and proposals, weighing and assessing carefully how a potential match might affect the family in terms of affluence and influence. The possibility of a proposal being rejected wasn't zero, so intermediaries got involved to test the waters and save face when necessary. Dr. Arthur Lee engaged his niece, Nancy Shippen of Philadelphia, to intercede with a young lady who caught his fancy, but on that occasion no match was made. Alice's cousin William, to whom she writes, matched well with Hannah Philippa Ludwell, tying the knot at St. Bride's, London on March 7, 1769, in the presence of his bachelor brother, Arthur Lee, Edmund Jennings, and Lucy Ludwell. Though the 12-year-old Alice wasn't keen on marriage, she concedes the crucial role her relations, including their relative newlywed William, would eventually play in making an advantageous match for her. But Alice wasn't a syrupy little girl pining for her prince to come. She had other interests. And after all, marriage wasn't inherently good. Only a marriage, she says, grounded in good and generous motives, rated with her. Those who said otherwise deserved raillery, satire. Maria Carter, granddaughter of Robert King Carter, copied into her commonplace book this dictum from Addison and Steele's popular daily The Spectator.
A happy marriage has in it all the pleasures of friendship, all the enjoyments of sense and reason, and indeed all the sweets of life. A marriage of love is pleasant, a marriage of interest easy, and a marriage where both meet happy.
Spectator acknowledges that to err too much in favor of romance or pragmatism is to risk unhappiness, though it seems to prefer the smoother road of pragmatism to the pleasant but uneven byways of love. Perhaps on grounds that continuity of status in society would compensate for the deficit of romance, but maybe not vice versa. As Henry Lee II put it to his older brother Richard Lee the Squire,
happiness can't well subsist on poverty.
In the next section of her letter, Alice shares news from a recent visit to William's old turf.
I was in Virginia when your letter came. Your friends there are well, but I never saw Westmoreland so dull. I was at Squire Lee's. He is the veriest Tremontane in nature. If he ever gets married, and his wife civilizes him, she deserves to be canonized.
Westmoreland has only just picked up a bit since Alice wrote. A year prior in 1771, William had this to say about his first cousin Richard, the bachelor king of Lee Hall, and commonly referred to as the squire.
Richard is still living and unmarried, though 45 years old, which is a great age in Virginia to be single, and his seat is called Lee Hall on the Potomac River.
But by a great age to be single, William certainly didn't mean that his second cousin hit the dating sweet spot at age 45, but rather that he was old. In the words of William's younger brother Arthur,
"In Virginia, a man is old at 30 and a woman at 20.
And the squire wasn't merely old, but also, says Alice, the veriest tramontane. Tramontane means over the mountains and originated as a way for Italians to refer to those non-Italian folks on the other side of the Alps. They were outside civilization from an Italian perspective, so what Alice means is that the squire's a barbarian, and she reckons his wife will deserve sainthood if she manages to civilize him. Alice continues her letter.
So you can't forbear a fling at female at ease. Believe me, curiosity is as imputable to the sons as the daughters of Eve. Think you there was ever a lady more curious than our cousin the squire? He himself is the greatest of all curiosities, but hang him. How came he to pop twice in my head while I was writing to you?
Alice wasn't the only one to take this view of the squire. To William's brother, Francis Lightfoot Lee, the squire was simply
the oddest man in the world.
On July 8, 1773, the Reverend Isaac William Gibbon penned this frank analysis of the squire for William Lee.
He looks fresh and hearty, and is, I'm afraid, as lewdly indulgent as ever from the appearance of his waiting maids Bab and Henny. If ever he marries, you may depend on it. As I told him the other day, it will be with some mop squeezer who can satiate his filthy amours in his own way.
Even as we utterly deplore the behavior suffered by enslaved maids Bab and Henny, we wonder about the term mop squeezer. Like six-pounder or cinder garbler, mop squeezer was demeaning slang for a young woman who performed the work the gentry reckoned to be beneath them. Work they sometimes took to imply a degraded character in the worker, as Gibbon outrageously implies here. The squire's brother John periodically urged him to stop messing about and to take a widow to wife, writing,
"You know very well you have spent a great deal of precious time, money, and wore your constitution in amours, and at last hustled your character thereby."
Hustle here means to shake together, and John just means that the squire's exploits have scuffed his reputation a bit. Eventually, the 60-something squire marries his 16-year-old first cousin, Sarah Bland Poitras, called Sally, at her home, Branchester Plantation in Prince George County. They had four children before the squire's death a decade later in 1795. Now, men marrying younger women was common, but a 40-plus year difference wasn't so. Alice concludes her letter to William with a strong testimony to her character and her interests.
The Annapolis races commence the 6th of October, and the company is expected to be numerous and splendid. The American company of players are there, and said to be amazingly improved. I should like to see them, as I think theatrical entertainment's a rational amusement, but I shall not be there. Indeed, I lead rather a recluse life. My greatest pleasure results from my correspondence of my friends in different parts of the world, and I am very assiduous to cultivate this kind of amusement. I know your ability will always provide you with materials to give me that pleasure, and, by hope, your inclinations will coincide too. Mrs. Annerly has not yet exhibited any railing accusations against you. I thank your Mrs. Lee for her amicable wishes, and desire you to greet her, and Dr. Lee, with my friendly salutations. Your affectionate cousin, Alice Lee.
The 4 days of racing launched on October 6, 1772 by the Maryland Jockey Club, commonly called the Annapolis Races, were splendid indeed. In his diary for October 1772, Virginia Planter in Politico, George Washington records his attendance at those races and a loss of £1.06. Washington also attended the comedies The West Indian and The Padlock put on by David Douglas' Old American Company, which Alice would like to have seen, but did not. Perhaps she was at her writing desk on those autumn days, indulging her preferred amusement for the edification of her lucky correspondents. Her letter to William is the only public remainder of that preferred amusement. much to our loss.
But perhaps you wonder if Alice ever tied the knot, only death could dissolve. Indeed she did, but not until late in life, becoming the third wife of a Revolutionary War veteran and planter. The Maryland Journal for April 1, 1788 issues this notice.
Married a few days ago at Blenheim in Charles County, John Weems, late resident of the state of Delaware, to Miss Alice Lee, daughter of the Honorable Richard Lee, deceased.
Alice might have adored the irony of an April Fool's wedding announcement. She lived at Weems Forest in Calvert County, Maryland, with her husband John for 15 months, before her death at the age of 40 in 1789. This notice of her death appeared in the September 3rd edition of the Maryland Gazette, and seems to have been produced by her grieving, grateful friends.
Died on the 25th of July at Weems Forest in Calvert, Alice Weems, wife of John Weems and daughter of the late President Lee. This elegant and accomplished woman lived highly respected and died much regretted by her acquaintances. Possessed of a strong and well-cultivated understanding, a masculine judgment, a brilliant imagination, a heart warm, benevolent, sincere, charitable, and fraught with the purest sentiments of Christian piety and of virtue, she was a bright ornament of society. Filial piety and respect, conjugal love and tenderness, sisterly affection, social regard, and unceasing neighbourly kindness were splendid traits in the amiable character of the deceased. The friends are impressed with the amplest conviction of these truths, and although she is lost to their view, she will long live in their memory, securely embalmed as an emblem of many inestimable virtues.
Alice is buried in a Lee family cemetery, which is the last trace of Blenheim on the property of the Morgantown Generating Station, just south of US 301 and the Harry W. Nice Memorial Bridge, which connects Maryland to Virginia. Her marble tomb marker was placed by the sister with whom she lived the majority of her life, minus those 15 months, Eleanor Ann by name, a poet who inscribed the marker with this mystery.
Oft would the suffering angel faintly smile, when from her bosom pain and...
The rest is illegible, but perhaps Alice contracted that influenza which vexed Maryland in the fall and winter of 1789. But that's a topic for a different day. Thank you for listening and subscribing to Stratford Mail. From Stratford Hall Historic Preserve in Westmoreland County, Virginia, I'm Director of Research, Dr. Gordon Blaine Steffi. Do more than just listen. Become an active participant with Stratford Hall in the production of new and exciting programs like Stratford Mail. Contribute online at stratfordhall.org/support-stratford.